Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. On the line, I got our best guy, Gareth Porter. Gareth, welcome back. How are you, man?
Hi, Scott. Happy New Year to you. I'm fine.
Happy New Year to you. Very great to have you on the show. Everybody, you know Gareth. The reason why is because I interview him every time he writes a thing because it's just great, man. It's the subject matter, and he's always right. And they're always lying, and he always sees right through the lies and tells the truth instead and everything, and it's just great, man. And you can find what he writes at Middle East Eye and at Truth Out. And he wrote the book, never mind the rest of them. This is the book on the Iranian nuclear program. It's called Manufactured Crisis, the truth behind the Iran nuclear scare. And it's the book on the Iranian nuclear program, trust me. Okay, so we got two here at issue, and I think I want to take the Truth Out one second because it can sort of be chapter three of the two major points that you're getting to here in the newest piece at Middle East Eye. U.S. military leadership resisted Obama's bid for regime change in Syria and in Libya. Very complicated story. Please go ahead and take us through it here, Gareth.
Right. And let me just introduce this story by suggesting that the headline resisted may be a bit too strong. I actually tried to use the language in the story that the military leadership in the United States, that is the Joint Chiefs of Staff specifically, actually tried to soften or to mitigate is the term that I actually used. The impact of the Obama administration's regime change policies in both Libya and Syria. They obviously were not in a position to directly change or to prevent the Obama administration from pursuing the regime change policies that it did in Libya and Syria. But what the military leadership did was to use means that it had at its disposal that were really beyond the control of the White House and the State Department, who were really, you know, the State Department was leading the charge. That is, of course, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was leading the charge initially in both Libya and Syria. And then eventually, of course, it was John Kerry who took over the State Department and continued that policy in Syria. But what the JCS and the Pentagon were doing here was using their ability to communicate with their partners in both the military and civilian positions in both Syria and Libya, either directly or indirectly. That's a very indirect way of saying that they were sharing information or contacting people in those countries or friendly countries to the United States who had direct connections with, in this case, Syria. So they were using those means to, in a way, undermine the policies in a partial way, clearly. They could not overturn the policy. They could only try to soften it or to mitigate it.
Yeah.
In the case of Libya, what the JCS did, and this is a story that came out, in the Washington Times.
And I'm very glad that you're writing about this. I don't think you and I have had a chance to discuss this, but this is, and people, you can find this on my blog, scotthorton.org/stress, and I have the links there.
Right.
It's just a few entries down. I have the links there to all four or five parts of this great series. They should have won a Pulitzer for this thing. It's Kelly Riddell and Jeffrey Scott Shapiro at the Washington Times. And they've, not these two, but that paper has published a lot of nonsense about Benghazi, this and that. But
right.
this series itself is just absolutely the most crucial information. You can find the links all, again, on my blog, Stress. So I'm sorry. Go ahead and sum up what we found out there, Gareth.
Right. So what the what the JCS were doing in this case was, first of all, and not just the JCS, but the military generally, they have their own intelligence agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA. And the DIA was basically putting out very strong indications at that point that that there was no support, no substantial basis for the State Department's argument that it was necessary to use force against the Gaddafi regime in Libya, because if they didn't do that, there would be a terrible massacre approaching genocidal proportions, that innocent civilians would be killed in such huge numbers that it would be something like the genocide in Rwanda. And of course, it was Samantha Power and others who were embracing this humanitarian argument for intervention, the responsibility to protect argument, that was being put forward by Hillary Clinton and the State Department. So first of all, the DIA was really countering that very sharply, saying, we find no evidence to support this argument. It's essentially, they said, not essentially, specifically, explicitly, the DIA assessed that this was essentially a mere matter of speculation by the people who are arguing that within the administration. So that was the first thing they did. The second thing that the JCS themselves did was to authorize one of their intelligence assets to make contact directly with the Gaddafi regime. And the primary contact was Gaddafi's son, Saif Gaddafi. And in the process of those contacts, the representative of the JCS, indirect, nevertheless important representative of the JCS, was suggesting that the U.S. military did not approve of this policy, that it was beyond their control. They were unable to prevent Obama from doing this. And they were suggesting that the Gaddafi administration should do its best to make a deal. Forget about the United States. They should make a deal with the French. The French were their best possibility for trying to mitigate the overall regime change strategy of the U.S. and NATO. And in the process of doing this, most important thing they did was to cooperate with Gaddafi, the Gaddafi regime, in putting forward a proposal. And this was after the NATO bombing had begun in 2011, I guess it was March 2011, promoting a proposal for a ceasefire in which the Gaddafi regime was prepared to meet the essential demand that Gaddafi step down. And the only conditions on that proposal or that offer to step down, essentially there were three conditions. One, that Gaddafi family that Gaddafi be given safe passage, that Gaddafi family have the sanctions that were being levied against it lifted, and that the Libyan army would not be deprived of its ability to resist the jihadists who were a threat to take over in Libya. So essentially, if in fact merely getting rid of Gaddafi and having a transition were the fundamental aim of the U.S. policy, then the U.S. administration, the Obama administration, the State Department should have embraced this.
Instead, well, and that's the other huge part of it, too, that what you just mentioned, that they knew and they weren't under any illusion that Gaddafi was right when he said, hey, this fight is being led by al-Qaeda and Iraq veterans against me.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there were people in the administration who understood that, but of course.
That's in the Washington Times series as well.
Right,
that was what the DIA was telling the Pentagon, right, and was telling the White House.
Absolutely. But of course, those people who were in thrall to the responsibility to protect, who had this liberal interventionist bent and who were determined to carry it out, would not hear anything of the sort. So, I don't think we can expect that they would absorb or accept the facts as laid out by the DIA. So the point I want to make is that the Obama administration, again, led by the State Department, rejected any negotiation with Libya, despite the fact that it would have, in fact, been a way out of the violence and could have prevented the chaos and the rise of the jihadist forces in Libya that followed.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, everyone, if you check out my Twitter feed, I just put out the link to that blog entry where I link to all the various, and it's the printer version too. I know the Washington Times website is a mess, but I link to the printer versions of all of those really great stories. They're really great stories by Jeffrey Scott Shapiro and Kelly Riddell there, that you can find. But anyway, so once Gaddafi's gone, then they got all these guns. Then what, Gareth?
Well, of course, you know, we all pretty much know the story that followed that, that despite the opportunity to resolve this peacefully, the State Department and the others in the administration pushing regime change wanted to arm the opposition and were determined to go ahead with this. With this war, to liberate, Libya. And, as a result, of course, Gaddafi was captured ultimately. And, apparently, I've not found absolute proof of this, but there are indications that he was tortured to death, immediately after his capture. And of course, we know Hillary Clinton, when she was told of Gaddafi's having been killed, joked, "We came, we saw, he died," and then giggled like a schoolgirl.
"We came, we saw, he died."
Yeah, you anticipated that one, I know, yeah.
I got it ready, loaded, and ready to fire at a moment's notice. I hope that some Republican run, you know, puts that in their campaign ads, but anyway.
Well, this issue definitely must be raised not only by Republicans, but by Democrats in the coming months.
So listen, you explain everything in such detail. I just want to kind of make sure that everybody's on the same page. We understand what's going on here. Hillary Clinton and Samantha Power and Susan Rice and Sidney Blumenthal and what's her name? Slaughter. What's her name? What's her first name? Anne-Marie Slaughter. Anne-Marie Slaughter. All these people, they decided they're going to have this regime change come hell or high water. The actual military tried to stop them and worked with Denis Kucinich to try to negotiate some kind of peaceful resolution, and they got one, and they had one, and Hillary Clinton absolutely refused to accept the peace deal reached by the military. She was the leader of the diplomats over at the State Department. And I've read this a few different places too, that they actually had a lineup in the Oval Office with the chiefs and Robert Gates, the Republican Secretary of Defense, on one side, and all the women Democrats on the other side, and it was all the military men were anti-war, and Obama sided with them. Not that the military guys all resigned or refused or anything like that. They went to war, all right. Robert Gates ordered it, all right.
Just to add to that picture, it's interesting that Joe Biden was also against the Libya regime change war, as well as John Brennan. So, this was a pretty strong lineup against the Hillary Clinton's crowd. It begs the question of what Obama's calculus was politically at that point. And I think that's a story that needs to be further really mined for future examination.
Okay, so now we have this situation. I interviewed Seymour Hersh last week, and I doubt you probably heard it, but it's funny. I actually went back and listened to it, which I hardly ever do with these things, but I went back and listened to it, and the giant hole in his theory is that really much of what he's saying, I mean, obviously what the military was doing about it is new, but the part about, it looks like the jihadists really dominate and the moderates are kind of marginal. And this is the kind of thing we've been talking about on this show since 2011, not even 12, right? I mean, this is the case the whole time that, you know, unlike the Iraq war, where Al-Qaeda in Iraq was a small part of the Sunni insurgency, in the Syria war, Al-Qaeda in Iraq is the Sunni insurgency. It's been like that. Even David Sanger, here's my confirmation bias, but I'm right. David Sanger at the New York Times said in 2012, all the guns that the CIA give to the mythical moderates end up in the hands of the head shop and suicide bombers. It's just a fact. It's been how it is. And everybody knows this. Everybody who cares about it has been crying about it for going on 5 years now. God damn it. But Obama just, he keeps trying to back the moderates, but somehow the jihadists keep getting the guns, and sooner or later we're going to figure this out and maybe get it right or something.
Okay, but I just want to point out one crucial point here that needs to be taken, it needs to be understood, and that is that these arms to the jihadists and extremists in Libya were coming from Qatar in particular, and Saudi Arabia and Turkey. They were all three picking out their own favorites and competing with one another to pick a winner who they could, pat themselves on the back about once the Libyan government was overthrown and they had a new government that they could claim was their product. And the Americans were essentially, passive, but obviously not resisting this, but they were not happy with this. They found out, certain people outside the people who were really pushing the regime change policy realized that they were really being had by their so-called allies. And this is part of this bigger problem, this bigger picture that I think has to be the primary focus for analysis in these months, and that is the way in which the U.S. has given its Middle East allies free rein to operate, despite the knowledge that they were undermining the security of the region, the stability of the region, essentially spreading chaos and threatening the fundamental interests of the American people. And I think that's the issue that we have to focus on.
All right. Well, so, what was really new to you? Was it pretty groundbreaking, the Hirsch piece about the military doing this kind of, insubordination here?
Well, I mean, that part having to do with Libya, that was not new. And what is new in the Hirsch piece, of course, is about Syria. And yes, that is new, that that the military actually, had this program to make contact with Germany, Russia, and to my mind, strangely, Israel. We can talk about that more, but that was the clinker in this that I, didn't quite understand. But to use those three governments to share information that they had reason to believe would end up going to the Syrian government and the Syrian military, that is intelligence on the jihadists in Syria. And this was specifically a way of trying to strengthen the ability of the Syrian army to resist the very powerful pressures that were being brought to bear against them beginning in 2012 by al-Nusra Front and other jihadists, as well as then ultimately Islamic State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should mention that Patrick Coburn wrote in the summer of 2014 that the military was passing intelligence to Assad through the Germans. But I don't believe, in fact, I went back and checked, and in that story he doesn't say, oh, and this has been going on for a few years now. I believe, as far as he knew, it was new after the fall of Mosul and the declaration of the caliphate.
But, right.
But he did break that back then.
That's a good point. And this, so what has never been published before is just how early this program began in 2013.
And this gets a little bit into your truth out story here. Well, it's kind of off the main point of this story, but anyway, on Yemen, I interviewed Mark Perry, the DC reporter who, I guess nowadays writes mostly for Al Jazeera, America.Al Jazeera. Anyway, I interviewed him about the war in Yemen, and he was saying that, as you could expect, that the generals were pissed off. Again, not like they're all quitting and going on the Sunday talk shows about it or anything like that, but they're mad that they're fighting for Al-Qaeda right now. They've been fighting against Al-Qaeda, only to Al-Qaeda's benefit this whole time in Yemen, but they've been bombing them, trying to kill these guys, at least, and now Obama has America working with the Saudis, flying as their air force against the Houthis for the most part. And he even had a quote in there of one of these generals, I believe it's a general, said to Mark Perry, you know, John McCain cries that we are flying as Iran's air force in Iraq. Well, fine, but we're flying as Al-Qaeda's air force in Yemen. And they're really upset about that. Are they doing anything about it other than, you know, typing in GPS coordinates for these Saudi pilots and holding their hands to their targets of innocent civilians or what?
Yeah, that's a great quote, and it does, in fact, express precisely the situation that exists here because, I mean, and this is not what I talked about in my piece, as you know, but...
Right. We can get to that in a sec.
Yeah, yeah. The issue here of the United States government, you know, essentially not just providing the original bombs, smart bombs, that were used by the Saudis beginning in their... beginning in March of 2015 to bomb Yemen. But when the Saudis ran out and after the Saudis were known to have committed war crimes, targeting cities and saying that they were doing so because the population was known to be supporting the Houthis, the United States failed to do anything to prevent the Saudis from continuing that war, but instead made the decision to sell the Saudis more of the same bombs that were being used, that had been used in 2015. So, I mean, this is a remarkable record of complicity in Saudi war crimes. And the Obama administration, you know, keeps saying, well, you know, we think that the Saudis should be using both military and political means. That's as far as they will go publicly in saying that they're not happy with what the Saudis are doing.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sorry, because I should have better sourcing on this by now, and maybe I could go back and refer to that Mark Perry piece as well, but I guess the two best are still the Wall Street Journal and the Los Angeles Times about how it's Americans that are running the whole damn war, basically, for the Saudis. I mean, we got Saudi pilots flying American-bought planes, but it's Americans who arm them, who clean them, who maintain them, who basically launch them, give them the mid-air refueling that they need to get to their targets and back and all of this. And seems like it's as much an American war as a Saudi one, because it doesn't seem like it even could happen if it wasn't being coordinated and run by the Americans.
Well, I don't know if it's being coordinated. That would be going too far. I think that somehow or other, the United States is doing something which has never been covered, to my knowledge, in any detail, exactly what it is the United States is providing in terms of intelligence. And, of course, the United States isn't eager to talk about that now because of the targeting of civilians and the terrible toll that has been reported widely.
Closest is the L.A. Times, and the L.A. Times did talk about that. It's our guys who are doing the targeting, American spies and military men.
They are not doing the targeting. I mean, they
are picking the targets, helping to pick.
No, they're not picking targets. They're providing intelligence in some fashion. But
I thought it was more specific than that.
I have not seen anything actually indicating that they're involved in targeting. In fact, you know, they're explicitly denying that. And obviously, they need to do that because otherwise the United States is really, I mean, in much worse shape in terms of complicity, even than would be otherwise be the case. But it's serious enough at this point that this should be a major political issue, and it's simply not being discussed at all, as you know only too well.
Yeah. All right. Now, if it's okay if I keep you just a little bit extra, can you talk about this very important article about Iranian support for the Houthis? I mean,
right.
Boy, talk about a narrative. You could almost lie into war with Saddam Hussein about, you know, over the certainty of this narrative in American society right now.
Well, I mean, this story began when I learned that the so-called expert panel named by the United Nations Security Council Committee on Sanctions Against Iran had issued a report last June. I first heard about it because there was a Reuters story that involved a leaked version of this expert panel report in May, or no, it was, I think it was late April of 2015, which described the report and, you know, in lurid terms, talked about how it found that that Iran had been arming the Houthis through their shipments through the Gulf of Aden, and you know, that they had been intercepted, and the panel had found the evidence that the Iranians had done this beginning as early as 2009, and then, you know, so I finally found the actual expert report, and I can tell you that it is one of the worst, most egregious cases of misleading, tendentious argumentation that I've ever seen in any kind of official document. I mean, it's just astonishing that this group, which, by the way, is essentially representatives of the United States and its Western allies, including, and I include Japan there, as well as Russia and China. And of course, that meant that the U.S. had a majority and clearly exercised that majority to insist on a report that would support the U.S. policy. So this report, which indicts Iran for arming the Houthis, was a political document that was obviously timed to serve the purpose of justifying the Saudi war in Yemen. And so what I did in my piece was to go back and look at the actual facts, and both the 2009 episode, which involved the alleged interception of an Iranian ship that had weapons on it. It turned out that there were no weapons on it at all. And this was documented in U.S. In these the WikiLeaks documents that were released in 2011. So I was able to cite those. Now, the 2013 was, the episode there was more complicated. It turns out that, yes, there were weapons, but the evidence strongly, strongly points to the fact that this was not from Iran, and it was not to the Houthis. It was from Yemeni businessmen who were intermediaries, and it was going to Somalia. So
you got to stop and love this stuff sometimes. It was, the boat wasn't even coming from Iran to Yemen; it was leaving from Yemen headed west.
That's right. And just by the way, and I'll just complete this thought. I didn't cover the most recent episode of an allegation which the Saudis made in September, which was that they had intercepted another ship that was an Iranian ship that had weapons on it, and it was intended for the Houthis. Well, the U.S. Navy itself has said, they knew all about this ship because they had inspected it, and it turns out that was headed to Somalia as well.
Man. All right. And so, but now let me make sure that I read you right here in this piece and hear you right here today. What you're telling me is that the argument that even, well, you know, the Iranians have armed them some, even if what the war party says is overstated, yeah, there's a little to that. No, there's not a little to that. There's nothing to that. This is the basis. If you, when you dig down to the bottom of the barrel of the talking points, you know, so-called kernel of truth, it ain't true.
Scott, these are the two cases, 2009 and 2013, are the two cases on which there is the most information, not much, but the most information on any of the supposed episodes of Iranian, alleged Iranian arming of the Houthis. And in both of those cases, it's very clear that they were concocted by the government of Yemen for political purposes, that this is a pack of lies that the U.S. government knows very well is nothing but lies.
Man. All right. Now, on the previous point here from the L.A. Times, I may have overstated what they say here, but just a little bit. It says the U.S. has been providing overhead surveillance information, intelligence and logistical support, as well as setting up a command center inside Saudi Arabia for U.S. military personnel to work with the Royal Saudi Air Force for planning and launching the attacks, it says. And then it says, too, it quotes, this is a little bit less solid, but it's a spokesman for Kerry saying that, no, Kerry, it's, oh, no, no. Well, oh, it's Kerry's spokesman quoting Kerry saying the U.S. would help with, quote, intelligence sharing, targeting assistance, and advisory and logistical support for strikes against Houthi targets. So that's, I don't know exactly the degree to which that's really happening on the ground, but those are their words.
What is the date on that one, Scott?
This is Los Angeles Times. With U.S. help, Saudi Arabia steps up airstrikes in Yemen March 26th from last year.
So it's the very first days. This is the very first days of the offensive. Mm-hmm. When the United States was, you know, interested in publicly stating just how strongly supportive they were of the Saudis. And, you know, I think that the point here is that the United States, was just totally out of its, how should I put this? They were out of their depth in getting involved in this from the beginning. They, just like everything else that the Obama administration has done. They didn't think through what they were doing at all. They were primarily thinking of this politically. They wanted to demonstrate that they were pro-Saudi and anti-Iranian. And so, you know, the whole public policy here is leaning so heavily in that direction. But I think, in that case, Kerry is overstating the degree to which the United States was actually doing targeting. I mean, I think that they were thinking of it as that we're going to support them in their targeting. We're going to give them information that'll help them target. So I'm not willing to go as far as to say that I just don't think that the United States is doing the targeting for the Saudis. I think they're picking their own targets. But certainly with some input of, yeah, aerial photographs from the United States, definitely.
Well, and, you know, I had a military guy say to me, I mean, all we're talking about here is typing in GPS coordinates. You know, it's right. Not like there's that much to it. You know?
Yeah, and it's bad. You know, it's bad intelligence because there's nothing there except photographs. You can't judge anything about a target from a photograph. It's ridiculous. It's the usual crap. You know, it's a lack of serious effort to know what you're targeting, or what you're you know offering as information to the Saudis. And the United States should, in fact, take the blame.
Yeah.
Fully for this.
Well, and you know, we might as well mention because it's the most important thing. And I had the guy from Oxfam on the show last week to talk about it. There are millions of innocent civilians whose lives are at risk right now, who are on the very brink of starvation. It's the worst humanitarian crisis on the face of the planet as we speak about it.
And once again, you know, this is the crisis that the administration doesn't want to talk about and the news media doesn't want to talk about. They all want to talk about the 250,000 civilians who have been killed in Syria.
Right.
Quote unquote.
Yeah, because they can use that as an excuse to kill more. But what's their angle here? You know?
Yeah, I mean, the angle here, of course, is that the administration, you know, is embarrassed and they don't want this to be talked about. That's the angle.
Yeah. All right, Gareth. Well, you're the best. Thanks very much for all your great journalism and your time here.
Thanks again, Scott.
Happy New Year, dude. All right, y'all. That's the great Gareth Porter. See why I've been interviewing him for 9 years? Every week for 9 years. The great Gareth Porter, he writes for antiwar.com, for Truthout, and for Middle East Eye. Hey y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at mastersamuraitech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from mastersamuraitech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at mastersamuraitech.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.